Can Your Beans Do That? By Cedric Shannon. So I got some great feedback on my last podcast. Actually, more like pushback, because I have to admit that some of the things that I said weren't true, or at least were fairly misleading. And this specifically has to deal with the bombing of the seed banks in the Middle East. And I want to start with Syria and Afghanistan. Syria, you know, was having its civil war. And when the U.S. got involved in about 2014, I mean, right, when the U.S. gets involved, it can, when they really get involved, it involves airstrikes. And as things were heating up, those who were in charge of the seed bank in Aleppo were getting more and more scared that it was going to get bombed. And so they actually were able to get a lot of those seeds out, and they shipped them off, I think, to like Svalbard and other places that were safer. I don't know all the details. Afghanistan is also a different story, in that in the war that we were having there, it looks like it was just looted, and probably by a group of Taliban or something, right? So very, very different than what I had said. And I had, essentially, I had used the phrase, and one of the first things we do when we go into these areas is that we bomb their seed banks. I made it sound like it was policy. And it's not. It's not at least explicit policy. Iraq gets a little more complicated because it did get bombed. The seed bank did get bombed. If you ask Arab sources, they will explicitly say that the U.S. bombed it. If you ask U.S. sources, they'll be like, oh, we don't really know if it was one of our missiles and bombs or if it was one of the rockets from, you know, the Iraqis. And so it's very telling when you start, you know, researching and looking at into it, typically you start using the passive voice, right? Oh, the seed bank was bombed, the seed bank was destroyed, or when it was destroyed, right? And so I actually think that this strengthens my overall argument if we don't know who bombs it. Because my argument is about ends and means. Ultimately, I'm talking about systems. I'm talking about, you know, gestalts and emergence and the ends and the means. And so I think it actually, if it clearly is not, you know, it's not at least explicitly, at least not on the surface, is this a strategic thing that we plan out and say, okay, let's, the first thing we're going to do is go bomb the seed banks. The problem is that, let me use the passive voice, is that in these conflicts, seed banks get destroyed. And so what I'm trying to do is talk about ends and means. And when I began, I was talking about means of agriculture and the means of conventional agriculture, because I had began the whole thing with scale and began with a whole premise that conventional agriculture was trying to save the world. And back then, during the time of Earl Butz, the policy was very explicit. We are going to change, and we made a radical change in how we did agriculture. We were going to go hedgerow to hedgerow, get rid of everything else, and just start producing these massive monoculture, monocropped grains. We were going to plow like crazy, and we were going to produce massive amounts for the very explicit purpose of creating agripower, creating this power which we could then use as a weapon of war. And these are the very explicit words that, you know, they used. And my point was that this is where the origins of those sorts of means of commercial agriculture, it plays a big part in how it how we grow things today. And we still use these means that were justified as winning the Cold War. And so now we find ourselves in a time when we no longer would explicitly want to say that we're using food as a weapon. If you were to ask, you know, like the U.S. policy, if you really got into the strategists who are trying to make the decisions, I think you would predominantly find people that are like, understand that we are a global system that really does better when we're stable. And so I think that they would be heavily invested in trying to keep things stable so that we can keep the economic machines going, because as a country, we benefit from having stability, right? And then when we have a region, we now understand if we have a region or a country somewhere that is destabilized and is failing, then there are these rippling effects that affect us detrimentally. So then we're invested in the stability. And I think that would be much more the policy. My point is that we're still using means that were developed and really structured as weapons of war, right? And so typically we're talking about these things as, second and third order, effects that we unanticipated and whatnot. And I think war is one of those things that, I mean, we're no longer even talking about second, third, we're talking about 10, 20, 50th, 100, thousands, right? I mean, war is one of those means that just has these rippling effects, that violence, that, atrocities happen, and then you can end up with conflicts that go on forever with, revenge, and each side has done horrible things to each other. I mean, right now we're dealing with, right, we have the Israelis who have been treating people in the Gaza Strip as, fourth class citizens, and then they have the terrorist group that comes and does, horrible things and kills people and takes hostages, right? And then they're going to retaliate and, cut off all their food, right? I mean, just like back and forth. This is the natural result and the natural second, third order effects of war, right? And this, I'm trying to argue that the same thing happens with how we, any system we do, in even the soil, right? So what we do know, what did happen in Iraq, the passive voice here, intentionally or not, right, is that the seed banks got destroyed. Now, where intentionality becomes quite a bit more nuanced, it comes, what did we do afterwards, right? So when we had gone into Iraq, and then we were talking about, okay, we want it to become its own, self-autonomous and self-governing country again, we said, yep, that's our goal, but here's 100 orders. It was Paul Bremer, and his 100 orders that you're going to have to follow, and that in order to set up your state and your government, you have to have these, 100 non-negotiable laws and legislation that you have to follow. And what's very explicit is that, and if this is more known, I guess, in regenerative agriculture circles, at least those that are fighting non-GMOs and are, interested in international stuff, is that Order 81 involved the protection of intellectual property rights, and specifically talks about, patents on life like seed, and that how, Iraqis were not allowed to save seeds from these organizations, right? And we're talking about multinational organizations, the Monsanto, that Bayer bought, the DuPonts, the Bill Gates, the, all these people who are trying to control the seeds and the food systems and the supply chains, right? Because they're trying to expand out of the West. They want to expand into these less tapped countries and regions, whether it's third world or developing world, whatever you want to call it, right? And so they're very involved, right? And this is where intention becomes a little trickier, right? We may not be the policy of American government to go in there and to make people dependent on, the seeds of multinational companies. But certainly, if seed banks get destroyed by war, these companies are going to be are going to leap on these opportunities, right? Because if you first destroy, if you anytime you have war, you destroy agriculture and the systems, you have to rebuild them, right? And typically, these are the seed banks would be how you rebuild with indigenous plants and plants that have been developed for that area and whatnot. Well, instead, these companies come in and they capitalize. Right. So intentionality there, like how much is orchestrated, how much is not, right? It's hard to know because in these cases, these companies do have explicit mandates, right? They have they're kind of given all this these rights, of people, so to speak, but without restraint and without the responsibilities, right? So they are mandated to make money. They are mandated to basically to extract and to exploit. And so we have these things, these massive entities that really have very little restraint. And so it gets harder to know how much is orchestrated and how much is just them taking advantages of these situations. But my point is about the means and the ends, because I think the average person is wanting, to do things, to do right, right? And so, I mean, when they were trying to sell the Iraq War, they made this big thing about how we had to strike first because they had these weapons of mass destruction, and how we had to get rid of this tyrant, and so that they could, and then how we're gonna put, get democracy going and not. So we have these goals, and my point was that we have goals, and we're using these means, but the problem is that the goals emerge out of the means. So even if you have, right, if you have separate goals and means, if you have, even if you have a good goal, but you're using detrimental means or means that, baked into them have extraction, exploitation, then you're not going to achieve your goals. And this gets to, the terms of the second order, third order effects, the unintentional consequences. And I think there are two ways that we approach this, right? And I think in general, what we tend to do is say, well, we have to get our think tanks going, and we have to think through and try to anticipate these second and third order effects, and really have to get better at strategizing and dealing with these things, right? The problem, though, is that these things tend to be nonlinear. And this is where it relates to scale. These things tend to be nonlinear because there's emergence. There are gestalts. There are these things that come out that you can't anticipate, right? There will always be, to use Talibian language, there will be the black swans. The whole thing is that you can't anticipate them, right? And so my point is going to be that our sort of strategic point of leverage is not at trying to really try to control the ends and work top down and try to make them happen, and by try to anticipating all the second and third order effects, but that our most efficient, most moral, most effective, and the point of leverage and point of entry is at the means to do right, right? Because this is, I am a mystic at heart, right? I do think that ultimately, from a grand perspective, all things are connected. And so I firmly believe that there, when you look retrospectively, you can look back and see that there is a connection between how we exploit and extract soil to the bombing of seed banks and the destruction of seed banks in the Middle East. Now, you couldn't have projected that back then and thought, oh, this is what's going to happen by processing and figuring out these models that that was going to happen. But in retrospect, I think we can see these connections, right? And the and part of the problem, I think, is that we always talk about second and third order effects as negative things. But the thing is that this is just the way reality is structured. There's a non-linear aspect to reality that you have these things that emerge, and these second and third order, tenth order, whatever effects. And typically we're trying to strategize and to try to anticipate, and we think of them always as negative things. But the thing is, they're also, it's just the way reality is, they can also be beneficial things. So actually, for us to be doing right by our fellow man, to be doing right by the earth, to be doing moral acts just in our everyday, ordinary life, to just treat the soil properly, can have these effects, and we may never know, but they may one day be affecting an area that learns to live in peace. Or they may affect an area in like the Sahara Desert, where they're starting to bring the ecology back. It may, affects areas that, suddenly can retain water, and then you have land that wakes up again, and then you have less pressure on social issues, and then, these warring factions could maybe come to peace. I mean, I don't know, we can maybe in retrospect look back and maybe connect those things. But our actions reverberate. That's kind of the mystic worldview, that all is one and it all reverberates. So that means that our most effective point of affecting for good is at those just ordinary structural means, right? So that if we treat the soil right and we live right in our tiny little sphere of influence, it can have these rippling effects. And when we don't, same thing, those rippling effects can move out and move out. And so to emphasize this, emphasize the non-linearity is actually the next step in understanding scale.